This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show Series 5, Episode 42, Negotiating Technique. We get technical this week. We start talking about how much of batting technique is open to negotiation. Turns out, quite a lot. Then we move on to bowling technique. We help our friend Dare with some technical issues, and we also talk about the techniques involved in reverse swing, and sometimes that technique is nothing to do with your body and all to do with the ball. All that and more coming up on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. This is your guide to coaching or playing better cricket. And there's three of us on the team who are going to help you do that. My name is David Hinchliffe. I look after things here, but you're not really tuning in to listen to me. You're tuning in to listen to the director of cricket coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garras.
Well, I'm not sure about that as a statement, but very good to be here nonetheless.
Well, the fact that people tune in to a podcast, that concept is a little bit old-fashioned.
No, I've got that bit. They tune in to listen to me, mate. I think it's a bit of a team effort, I would suggest.
Well, if it's not Garras, it must be the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavers.
Hello, guys. How are we doing?
Very, very good. Thank you very much. Now, I wanted to chat a little bit about technique. It's an ever-popular topic on Pitch Vision Academy, and we don't always talk about technique, but I'd like to talk a little bit about it this week. Incentivized by an article on Crick Info by Ed Smith, of course, the former England player and first-class cricketer for many years, and he's taken up a career in writing now, and he's an excellent writer, and he often comments on technical issues, and one of the things he's written about this week is the concept of head still and eyes level, even nowadays, is open to negotiation because you can see players who show an example of their head not particularly still when the bowler's letting go of the ball. So, Garras, is that the way you see it?
I see it very much in the way that Ed has put that down. And I think we have, over the years, spent too much time thinking about very basic things and try and apply that across the board to everybody, which has been something we've done with the best intentions but hasn't always served the people that we're working with the best. And I think Ed has typically described in his article how he came to this conclusion, or how it was confirmed to him, was by chopping a tree with an axe.
Yeah.
And finding that as he stared intently at the spot that he was trying to hit, then his body wouldn't react in the right way, and therefore he kept missing the target. And when he relaxed and just had a broader vision, a broader focus of vision, then he was able to hit the spot. And some of the language that he used around it was flow and languid and lazy, and all of those things would be very consistent with somebody who has a broad field of vision and somebody who likes to work with rhythm. And that's another word that came up consistently. And what we find when we're talking to people and listening to people is that they tend to use the words that tap into their personality. And that's exactly what Ed is saying. So if I was to work with Ed on his axe chopping technique, I'd have encouraged him to do exactly the same. Take a broader focus, probably have a slightly narrower base when he's swinging, and just let the axe do the work for him. And I think what he's done is talked about what we would call now with an action type approach, a rhythmic mover, which is what he is. The mistake comes when you then try and say that everybody should do exactly what he's just done in taking a softer focus when they're watching the ball, because that doesn't work for everybody. And somebody like Kevin Peterson, if he was chopping that particular tree down with an axe, would have taken a very precise focus on the spot that he would be aiming for and would have hit it with that precise focus.
Lavers, I was thinking particularly about the idea of keeping your head still at the point of delivery, which, as Ed points out, is a very, very, very tiny amount of time. And in fact, when you do think about it in that way, you might say, well, you know, what is the point of delivery? It's a very small amount of time anyway. Do you see players whose heads are moving at somewhere around when the ball is delivered? And is it something that you are keen to reduce?
Yeah, I think there's two ways you can look at the movement of someone's head. You can have controlled movement and you can have uncontrolled movement, can't you? So you can, someone can obviously be moving, whether it's slightly up and down or slightly towards the bowler, or even slightly sideways, but they're still in full control of their body, and they're still in control of their head position. And so they're able to maintain a good enough focus on the ball. Obviously, if the movement of that head is such that it's an uncontrolled movement, in that it's dictating where you move after the ball has been released, so you're already committed to your body weight going in a particular direction, then that's getting to a stage when it is going to be causing an issue, and it could cause an issue to where your subsequent movement goes, and it could limit you in moving in certain directions. So it's understanding, first of all, how much movement's going on. Secondly, if the player in case works well with an element of movement or works well from a static position, because it can work one way or the other. And then making the right diagnosis is, and one thing we seem to be coming back to week in, week out, is that there isn't a rule that everyone's going to work to. There isn't a single plan that we can write down that will change everyone's cricket all around the world. But it's the more we can understand how different people view a ball, different people move, different people feel as they go to hit a ball, the more different opportunity or different options of advice we can give them.
You can make an argument. You can often make a very sensible, logical argument for things, which seems watertight. But then when you actually go and do that thing, it turns out that it's not correct in the slightest. And there is often a detachment between making a logical and very sensible argument and what actually works for people. Would you say, Gareth?
I think that's absolutely right. And often logic is easy, isn't it? We can contain it. You know, we can say that this works logically, and that's fantastic to be able to do. But one of the best sayings that I've heard is from these two guys that I work with, is that people, when they talk about, for example, biomechanics and how the body moves, let alone how the body and the brain thinks and operates, but how the bodies move, is that often people talk biomechanics when they're talking pure mechanics, because they miss off the bio. And the bio bit is what makes us human, isn't it? And what makes us individual. And whilst there are mechanics that operate through our body, there are likely to be slight differences because of the complex nature of human beings. You know, that's why we are what we are as a species, and that's why we are what we are as individuals. So always remember the bio bit, always remember the human bit. I think that's absolutely crucial. And sometimes we go very into this logical, this is how this works and it has to happen like that. And you've only got to watch a game of cricket and two blokes bat together. Some of the best batting partnerships that have happened in the world, or some of the best bowling partnerships. You think of Donald and Nintini. There's a lot of difference between those two blokes in terms of where they are as people and also the way that they delivered the ball. Yet they were both incredibly successful together.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point from Gareth there. That often there's examples of how two different people can work together, but more so is two different people with two different styles can become increasingly difficult to play against, because it's two different plans, two different sets of ideas, two different deliveries, or two different ways of batting you've got to have against an individual, two different people you've got to bowl at. So not only creating or seeing different people in the same team can be a regular thing that you'll see, but getting them to work together and getting them paired together often can be a really good way to challenge the opposition and make life difficult for the opposition.
It's kind of an extension of that idea of having a left-hand, right-hand batting partnership. It's just, you know, there's more factors involved in it, isn't there? And I think that's kind of one of the strengths of cricket as a sport, is that it is so accommodating of so many different types of people. You can have extremely tall people, extremely short people, all kinds of different styles, and they can all go together and form a cricket team, and that's a great thing to see.
Absolutely.
Right, let's wrap up this section with a yes-no round. Three questions that can only be answered yes or no to, no matter how much more that the team want to say. So if you're ready, I've got the first question here. First question, you can state your opinion, even if there's a 40% chance you're wrong.
Yes.
Yes.
Second question. Success is a trophy. Failure is an institution.
No.
No.
Third question. Thought is intrinsic to experience.
Yes.
Yes.
That's a deep one. That takes some thinking
about. I had to read that about, it's only, what is it, 5 words? I read that about 15 times.
Time now for the mailbag, and it's this portion of the show where we get some reader and listener interaction. Readers to the Pitch Vision Academy website and listeners to this very show get to send in their cricket, coaching and playing questions, and we do our level best to answer them. And the best question of the week wins a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And if you want to send in your question, feel free to email us on coach@pitchvision.com, and there's other ways to get in touch with us. We will give you those towards the end of the show. The first question's a little bit of a visual one here, gents, so we're going to have to be careful about how we answer it, bearing in mind that people can only hear us. And it's from Dare, who, if you remember a few weeks ago, Dare was moving up a level, and he was struggling to bowl against better and older batsmen who were more capable and causing him problems. Well, he sent in now some videos of his action, and he wanted us to have a look and see if there's any advice we could give. So we've had a look at those videos, and I wanted to get your feedback on some general advice that we can give to Dare, bearing in mind that we're not working with him day to day.
Right. Well, firstly, great footage. Love the side on, love the rear view. One of the best views that you can get is from the front as well, because we see so much. So one of the tips that I'll give you, Dare, is if for the future, is more for your own benefit rather than sending in to us necessarily, but is to get your camera on the lowest settings on your tripod and effectively stick that a few yards in front of yourself and bowl over the top of it, because you'll get a completely different perspective, but also one that you can possibly then look at television footage from, because all footage, you know, nowadays has multi angles, and you'll see bowlers running towards the camera when they're doing their own analysis on the telly, and you can have a look at them and you can have a look at yourself. So the front on footage is useful. So that'd be my first tip for you, which goes away from your technique, but more about how you can get more good visual information out of your video camera.
Just a quick question sidebar on that, Gareth. You are suggesting that you do it low down. Is that for convenience, or is that the best angle?
Well, it's not necessarily the best angle, but if you're on your own, which it looks very much as if Dare's on his own here when he set up his own drills, because there's no tracking of him in his run up, for example. So that gives me an indicator that he's set up a stationary camera. That he's been very self-reliant, which is fantastic. That if you're on your own, then get the camera in front of yourself, point it, make sure that when you stand up at point of release, you can see everything, and then run in and bowl with it on. And again, the other great bit of footage that Dare's given us is the 240 frames per second that he's given us as well is really good. You could do that bowling towards the camera. If you've got somebody with you and, say, a wicketkeeper, then obviously you can put the camera further away and behind the wicketkeeper and video over the keeper's shoulder and get a more distant view. And possibly you can get that person to zoom in and out from the back of your run-up into your release position as well. But if you're on your own, like Dare seems to be here, then I would certainly stick it in front. And you get a great view. And, you know, it's not the optimal one, but it's certainly an enhancement on just getting the side and the rear view.
Okay, all right. And what was the next point you were going to make?
The next point is I really like your action, first and foremost. And I'm interested in that in your question, you've also given us some feedback about, I know in my side-on view that my arm is low, but I've corrected that. And I'm interested in, because on the side-on view that I've got here, I can't tell whether it's low in terms of the axis that it's bowling on. I notice that it's low in terms of your action, but then in order to pick up pace, and very much listening along the lines of Stephen Jones and Ian Pont, if you've got your temp pegs in place between your back leg and your front leg, then you are going to be low at that point. And if you try and bowl from a higher height by raising your action, then you're likely to reduce the impact of your 10 pegs and therefore not be able to generate the power up the body and through the back of the hand into the ball. So I actually like the side on view. And I think actually out of the three of the views that I saw, that it was the one that most got me excited, because I thought, wow, when I saw that. When I went to the back views a couple of times, and I think this is part of the process of trying to get your arm up higher and your release point higher, is that you picked up your back foot off of the ground just prior to point of release. So therefore, your balance and your power production is based purely off of one leg. Whereas you see on your sidearm view that you've almost dragged your right foot, your back leg, along the ground, which has created that real stability, like that catapult that Stefan often talks about. Without that, the back wheels of the catapult being on the ground, the power that's going to come out of the catapult and into the ball that it's thrown is going to be reduced. And that's what I see, particularly in the third video, where you pick your back foot off the ground quite significantly. And as a result, the ball floats out towards the stumps, whereas on the first two balls, you managed to keep your back foot lower and the ball came out with pace and power on it. The other thing that happens when you pick up your back leg is that often your release position gets higher and it also gets a bit earlier, which again changes the trajectory. The first bit of footage from the side, I thought you got spot on, and notice where your release point is, which is in front of yourself rather than straight over the top of yourself. And that's something that will help your pace and also driving the ball into the wicket. So if I was to pick an order of preference, I would go the side on view is technically the best one. And I'd encourage you to connect with that back foot being as close to the ground or dragging along the ground, because that will give you much more strength, stability, balance and ball speed.
Now, I know, Lavers, you've been working away doing some diagrams in the background there while Gareth was talking. So what have you come up with?
My initial question, if we just go back to his question, my arm is too low, but I've corrected that. My initial thought was, which arm is he talking about? Because I was looking at it and I was thinking, well, as I'm playing it through and looking at it now, but I was thinking the front arm's extending up, but primarily forwards, which is brilliant. So it's directing him. And it's not going to be a big downward pulling motion, which is going to make him fall away at the crease. So that's very, very good. From the side-on view, as we discussed, his point of release is actually reasonably high. He's got a little bit of flexion in his body, but that's helping his speed, even though it's not helping his height necessarily. But the extra speed he's getting from that is going to be beneficial when it comes to the ball impacting in the ground. He's got a real long delivery stride, which shows he's really flexible and athletic as well. Although that maybe does cause him some of his issues in terms of maintaining ground contact. One of the other things I would just look into is a synchronisational point of view. And it's just the moment at which he begins his left arm drive. So his left arm driving back into him or pulling back into him. That's one of the things that does get raised a lot, is that extension of the front arm and then the pull back with that front arm back in towards the body to try and create that stretch reflex or catapult action over the top. Ideally, again, in terms of synchronizing arms with legs, it would be ideal to have that front foot locked on the ground. So when that pull was starting to take place, we were pulling against a stable base. And at the moment, he's probably just a fraction early and he's starting to pull when that left foot's still up in the air. So he's not actually pulling himself up and over his front foot and pulling that body forward quite at that moment in time. But I kind of agree with Gareth in that the first thing I said was, or the first thing I thought was, this guy can actually bowl quite well. He looks pretty good. I mean, we don't get videos often enough, and sometimes when we do, they're not always the highest standard, first of all, of filming, and secondly, of the performer involved. But I'd like to see him at full pace as well and see how that came up at full speed, because he looks like he's really working hard. He's got some of those KPIs that we look for in a fast bowler. I mean, one of the difficult ones, and one of the ones that's difficult to train, is that locked front leg, but he does that very, very well. He really looks like he attacks the crease. He has an element of consistency, although Gareth has picked out one thing with his feet that's maybe inconsistent. But yeah, I think I think a lot of what he's doing is really good, so he should be really impressed with the work he's done so far.
So let me put you into a slightly awkward situation as a coach. Imagine that you had one session with this player. And so you could only, you know, you could work with him for an hour or 45 minutes, something like that, and then that was it. You're never going to see him again.
I would suggest he tries to establish that feeling of both feet on the floor. And that's something that would probably be developed from a walking through drill to begin with. So I'd try and re-establish that feeling of holding a solid base and maintaining a solid base whilst bowling the ball. I'd also try and work on that slight synchronisational matter that I mentioned, and just try and get in the habit of the left foot and the left hand working together so they extend forwards together, which allows that left hand to then pull from a stable base and allows you to pull up and over that front foot. Gareth, what would you throw in there?
I agree with you on the base thing, and I think he'll connect to that quite easily because he's done it pretty well in the side-on footage he's shown us. So he's obviously capable of doing it. I'd get him in some temp peg stuff, I think we can that top half and that bottom half working well from going from temp peg one to temp peg two. Because you're absolutely right, Sam. His front and his front arm aren't, and I'm looking at a still of that at the moment. And if we can get that, which shouldn't be too difficult, then I think that would be my 45 minutes. If we get that right, I reckon it's a matter of time before it all drops into place. Because there are some unbelievably good parts to this bowling action, which are really exciting.
Yeah, I think a lot of the time you can look at a bowling action for literally 5 seconds and you can start talking and you can start reeling off glaring things that can be developed and can be improved. But the more you have to spend a bit of time thinking about it, all it's telling you really is that he's doing a lot of things really well. And there are always areas to improve on, but he's doing a lot of things very, very well. Plus, he's really keen to learn. He's coming to us. He's asking questions. He's getting people. He's getting the video footage set up. Loads of plus points.
That's the most important thing, I think, Sam. He's got an inner drive, isn't he, within him that is making him motivating himself and getting him to go out there and seek that next bit of information. And you could turn up at any of my sessions, and I'll be happy to receive that into any group. And I'm sure that would be the same for you. Yeah.
Next question's from Kumar, and it's a little more brief and a little less visual. And the question is, I want to know about reverse swing. So is reverse swing a thing, or is it one of these things that is only reserved for the guys who can get the ball up above 90 miles an hour?
Well, it's not only reserved for those guys, because the research that I've been privy to would suggest that if you can bowl over 80 miles an hour, then you're more likely to get the ball to behave differently than convention. But equally, I've seen bowlers that bowl at under 80 miles an hour with the right conditions and the right ball and the right pitch and all of those things around them have been able to get the ball to go against the shine, which is effectively what we're talking about. Now, some people would call that contrast swing at lower speeds, but Paul Collingwood, for example, could get the ball in certain conditions to go back against the shine, even though he'd like to have thought himself as an 80-mile-an-hour bowler, but he couldn't quite get there. Every game he'd come off going, was that 80? No, Colin, 78, mate, I'm afraid. Keep going, big lad. But he used to get it to go. But as soon as you get over 80, and obviously the faster you go, the more the ball's likely to trip the air. But I think the most important thing for us to understand is how we get that ball into condition, because there's been a lot of misnomers and legend around about, you know, bottle tops and getting the ball wet and all of those things. And I've been very lucky to work alongside some really key exponents of reverse swing in Waqar Yunus and Wasim Akram. And all they used to do effectively was get the ball when it starts to go really, you know, scuffed on both sides, they'd choose which side to go and they'd put a 50p piece, bit of shine on the dome of the ball and make sure the rest of that side of the ball was smooth. And then the other side, they'd just let happen to it, whatever. But they would keep it dry. And this is the crucial bit. is to keep the ball dry, to work in a circular fashion rather than a strip fashion when we're shining, and make a dome of 50p or maybe a little bit more on the top, on the crown of the ball, on the side that you're trying to shine it. Keep it dry, work on it for as long as you can. And the worst thing that can happen, even if you haven't got these guys bowling 80 miles an hour, is that the ball will start moving laterally in a conventional fashion. Before we learn about reverse swing, let's learn about getting the ball in the right condition.
Do you see much reverse swing at the level that you coach, Lavis?
You'll get guys at lower levels who will produce the ball in the same manner, but maybe they don't have that support around them, and the attention to detail of looking after the ball isn't quite as good. And that isn't necessarily the bowler's fault. It might just be that he's releasing the ball correctly and he's setting it properly in his hand and his actions preparing for it, but the ball hasn't been maintained in the right way. Obviously, when you get to the younger age groups, the pace is right off. So if we're talking about a 13, 14-year-old who's bowling, first of all, there's probably less attention on the ball anyway from the batsman. So identifying shiny side, non-shiny side, and what the ball's going to do in advance is probably less likely to occur. So if someone can swing the ball both ways conventionally, that's a great weapon to have at that age. Secondly, the games don't last as long at the younger age group. The surfaces aren't as abrasive. The ball isn't hit as hard. The bowlers aren't bowling the ball into the surfaces hard. So the ball is generally in better condition come the dying overs of the game. Doesn't mean to say that we shouldn't be trying to conserve the ball and look after the ball in the same manner, because as Gareth suggested a minute ago, worst case scenario, you're just going to keep swinging the ball conventionally for a longer period of time just by looking after it.
So if you are on the cusp, perhaps, of someone who might be able to get that ball reversing, then I think the key that we're talking about here is the condition of the ball. But are there any specific pieces of advice we can give to the bowler?
Well, talking to people that have done it and done it really well, a number of them have learned to drop their arms slightly when the ball's going to reverse. The other thing that people do as well is, and this is where some of the guys in the subcontinent are very good, is when the ball isn't reversing, they'll hold themselves back. So they'll bowl at sort of medium pace or just above medium pace, trying to be really accurate. And then when the ball starts to go, then they'll up their pace significantly. So Zahir Khan is a classic for that. He's somebody who will operate in round 77, 78 when the ball's not doing anything. And when it gets to that time where it's got the chance of going, then all of a sudden he'll up his pace to 85 miles an hour. And that's when obviously the ball will start to trip a little bit more. But he conserves his energy and conserves his real impactful pace times when the ball is going to move the most.
It's time for 60 seconds of an uninterrupted rant, comment, perhaps even a question from one of the team. And this week it's Mark Garraway. Garraz, you're on the soapbox, over to you.
Well, I'm going to follow on from the last question, actually, around shining the ball. And, you know, how much time do we spend on grips and running up faster and angles of approach if we're not going to look after this ball? It is our bread and butter. It's something that is going to give us a chance of getting a wicket even when the game is going against us. We look after that. At some point, the ball will look after ourselves. And I talked a minute ago about having a rotational shining method as opposed to a strip one. So we normally, you see it on two people's trousers, don't you? The ball going up and down the trousers. And all we're doing is we're putting a strip down the centre of the dome on one side of a ball, which is going to give us absolutely nothing. So get used to rotating the wrist, get the ball in the hands, get the ball in the fingers, rotate it around, work around the seam, but in particular work on the crown of a ball, especially when it's starting to get a little bit rough around the edges.
So plenty of food for thought on this week's show. Hopefully you can go away and have some good ideas for things to take to your team. And hopefully they won't look at you like you're too crazy if you start shining the ball in a slightly different way, like happens with me sometimes. That's just about the end of the show for this week. There is something we need to do before we go, which is to decide on the winner of this week's prize, the online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And we had some cracking questions. One was from Dare, about improving his bowling action, and the other one was from Kumar about reverse swing. Gareth, which one did you prefer this week?
I'm going to go with Dare this week. I love the video footage. I love your inner drive to want to get better. And so I'm going to give it with Dare. But Dare, you're beginning to build a bit of a monopoly of courses.
Yeah.
So I'm going to put a limit on this. It's the last one that we give you until you come back and show me that all of the work that we've given you to do is borne some fruit. So you're the winner this week. This will be yourself even more in the future.
Now, Dare's a winner, but if you're listening to this show and you think you want to be a winner too, then you can send in your question and you get a chance to win that prize. Gareth, if somebody wanted to send in their question to us, how would they get in touch to do that?
Well, they could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email at coach@pitchvision.com.
That's correct. You can also get our Twitter by going to @pitchvisionacad, send us a message there, or you can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy, and we are now at over 40,000 people on that site, so that is a tremendous place to go to discuss cricket in all its forms, coaching and playing. If you want to listen to this show every week, we encourage you to do so. You can subscribe to the show in iTunes or in any podcast catching program, Apple Podcasts or Downcast, Overcast, Dogcatcher, any of those you'll find us. But if you want to subscribe in the old-fashioned RSS way, then you can go over to pitchvision.com/academy and click on the podcast link for all the details on how to subscribe. And that's all for this week. We hope you listen next week, but until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Lavis.
Cheers, boys.
Cheers, guys.